Okay, aloha. My name is Kevin Gavigan. I'm 62 years old. Today is the 30th of October of 2023, and we are right now in the town of Wailuku.
How's it? My name's Kukui. I'm 23. The same date, October 30th, 2023. We stay Wailuku on the island of Maui. Yeah. So I get the privilege of asking the first question. Haha. So I know that you are a landscape manager, and I know that you grew up on a farm, Carnation Farm, up Mauka in Kula. So my first question is, what was your first actual job, and which job did you have that made you want to become a person who works with plants?
My father ran a restaurant then in the Silver Sword Inn in Kula, and at some point he decided to sell that and buy a farm. And I think he decided to buy a farm because his sons were at the age where we would get into mischief, and I don't know if getting the farm prevented that, but so he bought this farm, and as we were growing crops, small truck crops, Chinese peas and beans, and then primarily carnation flowers, and then later it was protea. And throughout that period of time, and then I began to get into high school, I just, in all those experiences on the farm, I felt like I wanted to be a, you know, mahiayin, grow food and crops. I was in the FFA, and I did all that kind of stuff.
What's the FFA?
Future Farmers of America. So that's where my interest in agriculture came from. So, and then I went to school at the University of Hawaii and studied horticulture, and hoped to become a producer, and which I never achieved. I became interested and involved in landscape, the combination of art and agriculture in my mind, because that was most mentally stimulating to me. And so 30 years later, I'm still doing that.
Beautiful. And so I know, like, you guys, where you work, you guys often make trips out to Ko'olawe. And so how did you get involved with going to Ko'olawe, and how has that impacted your career up to this point?
I don't know if it was a career choice. The connection to the Four Seasons Hotel where I work, or my career, was simply the Four Seasons wanted to find an opportunity to get involved in the community. And so Ko'olawe was an opportunity, and to go there and to plant native trees. And specifically, the Four Seasons was celebrating their 50th anniversary as a luxury hotel company, and wanted to plant 10 million trees around the world. And so our specific property was to plant 10,000 trees. And we had decided, and that was your mom's influence as well. She was working there. And we talked about, hey, this is an opportunity that we could go plant trees on Ko'olawe. So as far as my career, that's where it was. But in terms of, hey, this is a great idea to go to some place that is culturally significant to us and have that that influence in our lives as well, to experience Ko'olawe. I had never been all my life that I have lived on Maui. So we had begun to go there and plant trees in the name or flag of of Four Seasons Resort. But while we went there, and people always say this at going to Ko'olawe, that, you know, you go there with the intention to try and restore and help and experience that island for those reasons. But when you come back, you always really, and we have gone several times now, but every time we come back, and with every group that I've gone out there with, we have we can't remember how many trees we planted or what we actually did as much as what we experienced, and therefore what the island gave back to us. So that seemed to be more relevant in all of our lives, the impact of. And it's subtle, and it's hard to say, you know, what it was. You know, was it spiritual? Was it culturally connecting? Was it the experience of seeing the land and working the land and seeing it regenerate itself and its potential to be able to do that? That was really enriching to all of us. So that's what we did.
Oh, I love that. So what was the most significant memory for you on that island? Since you've went multiple times, is there like any one or like multiple memories that stood out to you from there?
There's many. I met Dr. Aluli. And that was significant to me because I felt he and the others who had gone to Kaho'olawe and made it an issue and got Kaho'olawe back were small ants against the U.S. Navy and accomplished their purpose and got Kaho'olawe back for the Hawaiian people. And he was so humble about it. I could and should say more on Dr. Aluli, but he was such a humble man. But there's so many other things on Kaho'olawe that were impact my mind. They have the annex there, and I read at that annex about Kamoholi'i. There's a place out on the east side called Kaulana o Kamoholi'i, no, Kalua o Kamoholi'i. He's Hale, and in that annex I read about how he would appear. All the stories of interactions with Kamoholi'i all had the common thread of he would appear in times of peril, and he would hang around until the people were safe, and then he would disappear off. And that was consistent with this really benign story that Tutu used to tell me in Waipio Valley. They huli their canoe, and this shark came and it hung around until they got Tulamuliwai back safe on land. And when I read that on Kaho'olawe, that was Kamoholi's. And I don't know if that's tendencies of sharks, but that gave me chicken skin to think that, was that Kamoholi'i that Tutu was experiencing and didn't know, you know, because her uncle was with her and he would tell her, "Hey, don't worry, the shark is your makoa, you're not gonna worry." Mm-hmm. And so to read that from an anthropologist's point of view who had studied Kamoholi'i, because in that ahupua of Kanapo was his kalua Kamoholi'i. So that really shook me to my cultural bones, yeah. And I think I said this already, you know, being on that island to participate in the plantings and to see, a lot of the ocean areas were reserves. And when you go swimming, and they allowed us to go swimming and to see the fish, the marine life that was there. And as compared to Maui, you know, the Maui Reef was just so over-harvested. When I was on Kaho'olawe, I could see how vibrant the reef was, with teeming with all kinds of fish life, all kinds of life. And I thought to myself, the poison in the water really is us. Not managing how we treat the ocean. And that was super apparent looking at the reefs of Kaho'olawe and knowing the reefs on Maui and how overfished they are. You always lament how I never took you night diving to go catch fish. And what have I always said?
That they're already all over harvested already.
No more fish already. Get more divers than get fish.
Yeah.
Right? So I just pulled myself out of the food chain there. And I know there's, but still, when I look at Kaho'olawe's, that reef's, the ocean's ability to revitalize itself, if we but leave it alone, that was very impacting to my mind when I think about our influences on our natural resources. Yeah. Another thing that really hit me at Kaho'olawe was seeing the zenith of the sun for the first time. And Uncle Lopaka took us up there. And he took me that one time when we first went there. And we took the whole group up there. We had a little kava ceremony. We chanted the sun to come up, Yala'e. But before that, Uncle Lopaka said, "Look, we're gonna see how the zenith of the sun comes up." And I had never seen it before in my life. And in the dark of the night, there's this spire of light that comes up out of the east, right out of above where the sun normally comes up from. And even when we go up to Haleakala to see the sunrise, I have never seen the zenith of the sun. But it's really a faint column of light, almost like a pyramid, that starts at the horizon and rises up to, I don't know, infinity. And it's beautiful. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever had, because I'd never seen that in my life. And we call that the zenith of the sun. I don't know what the physics are that make that the first sliver or amount of light, if it is light, it has to be light, to appear before the more obvious rays of the sun begin to approach the rising of the sun, right? And then we start the Ealae, right? Until the sun is fully above, you know, the pico where it comes out, right? And that was super impressive to me. And even before the sun rose, I had not been aware of how the stars cross the sky. And I think this is a critique to how unobservant we are. I grew up in Kula, and I had not observed these patterns in the sky. And Uncle Lopaka pointed out to, you know, these constellations the night before he did. And then when we went up there for sunrise, we saw where those constellations have moved to. And it's in this location where the navigator's chair is, and we had already had discussions about how people had learned how to navigate with the stars, with the winds, with the currents, from these vantage points. And so all the lessons of nature, to how to observe nature, to the ends that you become a navigator, not that we were going to become navigators, but that we would prick our minds to be better observers of nature, which is what our kupuna were masters of, which because of TV and our cell phones and everything, we have become idiots about. But to see that revealed to our minds was one of the big things that I constantly draw back to. And since then, we have been looking at stars and looking at their movements and the different seasons, how they come out. That really stimulated a lot of study and contemplation on our part, right? So it wasn't just that one experience at Kaho'olawe. It just left us wondering, right? Isn't that the beauty of chasing knowledge, you know, to get it pricked first? And then, and I don't know if for you, if that's what stimulated your interest in nature, because that's what you studied. So tell me where that comes from.
I've always been a fan of the ocean. You know, I grew up in Kula too.
I remember that.
Yeah. And but I remember I would cherish us taking huaka'is or field trips down to the ocean so much more because we were away from it so much more often than most of my friends that I went to school with. Because they all grew up like spearfishing, diving, surfing, whatever. And, you know, we stay at Mocha, so we never get to go down as much.
Right, and that's how I grew up. Same thing, yeah. Same experience.
And so I feel like that's why I cherish my time more down there. Not to say, like, you know, I know, like, everybody has their own connection, their own relationship with the ocean, with the kai, but mine, I feel like if I lived down Makai more, or if I was raised there, I think I wouldn't have appreciated it in the same capacity that I do now. And with Ko'olawe, I remember my first trip was when I was in middle school. I went with you and Ma. And that was the first time that I was like really immersed like 24/7 in nature and field work. That was my first taste of field work. And like you said, it kind of pricked a curiosity of seeing how everything is connected here on this Honua, on this earth, and how everything up Mocha affects everything down Makai. And like how you said, like, if it's better if left alone. And I also saw that if we also put in our work as if we give back to the island, if, as if we give back to the land that nourishes us, then it will help things down Makai too. And so that's what I remember kind of seeing, not only from that trip, but also from the other trips I was fortunate enough to go on, seeing the efforts of people of Kanaka being put into that land to restoring that land. And also like what you said, that really like was prominent to me, what you said, like, we go with the intention to help restore it, but in the end, I never really remember how many pili grass bales we planted or how many a'ali'i seedlings were put on that island, but I always remember the connections that we made with the people over there, and that ohanas, all the multiple ohanas we make over there, and that spiritual connection, that cultural connection that we make, that island in itself helped restore me. As a person who is from the ocean, as a person who is from that land, not from Ko'olawe Island itself, but from this whole world in general, it helped restore my ability to connect, to reconnect where, you know, we as humans come from the land, from the ocean. And so that's kind of like, when you said, stimulated my continuous curiosity to kind of unveil and trying to reconnect back to, you know, those secrets in the ocean and in the land. And, you know, in time, I, like Ko'olawe also taught me, like, in time it'll reveal its secrets to us, but we have to stay curious and we have to stay, you know, doing the right things in a pono way, in the right way. And so that's what I remember a lot about Ko'olawe. And I think my last time that I was able to stay on that island, or one of the last times I was able to stay on that island, was when we took Mo'okiha over. And that was the first and last huaka'i that I got to go on with Kapena Kalapa, Okocha Kalapa. And I remember I went with him and his daughter, Auntie Kala. And so just being able to see them have the same passion, like I feel like you and I have the same passion for reconnecting to our roots, into the land, into the ocean, and being able to, you know, be there with them. I remember they took a group of us from Kulakayo Puni Okenke Kaulike and from Kamehameha Maui, and so I remember I gave up running my last cross-country race on our home course to go over there and to kind of be restored again in a sense, and to see our traditional wa'a go over there to a place that was so sacred, to a place that was so vital to the education of navigators in Hawaii. And I just remember just being over there and talking story and, you know, kind of doing these curious investigations, like Pokaneloa, the rock over there on Ko'olawe, like trying to figure out what that was used for. And so like stories and memories like that kind of helped me stay curious, and not only one thing but in everything, because then eventually everything connects together. You just have to stay patient and you have to stay curious. So
you just came back from a huaka'i. Northwestern Hawaiian Islands.
Yeah.
Is there any element of your initial learning or impressions of Kaho'olawe that you took up there with you?
I remember it was towards the end of our huaka'i, actually, where we chanted O'awekuli, O'kaiuli, and it's a chant that we chant at the end of... Wow. It's a chant that we chant at the end of each huaka'i that we, you know, that we go to Ko'olawe. And people who... We were familiar with the chant, yeah. And so I remember I was on board with one of my other fellow kanaka'oiwi, Mahina. And so she went to Ko'olawe too with Pikio. And so they also do that chant too. And so I remember... it was also really awesome to kind of teach others on board who aren't familiar with Hawaiian culture and how we do huaka'is, how we do, you know, adventures and trips. So we got to teach them a little bit about O'awekuli, and through that we got to teach them a little bit about, and we got to talk a little bit about Ko'olawe and Kanaloa and his kinolo, and kind of integrating that into our work, into our workspace, and also being able to talk about that oli on the live stream, and also recollecting on, you know, the memories of sharks. I also told them a story about these fishermen. I forget when it was like 5 years ago, you know, that fisherman caught that shark that had all these hooks in its jaw, and oh. We had that theory that was kamahuali'i, because that shark was, I don't know if he was in the reserve during trolling season, or when he got a permit, or if he was like way off Ko'olawe, but he was like in that kind of that general realm where his home is, Kalua, or Kamhuali'i was. But I remember talking about that, and you know, one of the whole like distinct highlights of that trip was seeing Manoa, these sharks up in the Northwest Hawaiian. Like, we only saw pelagic white tips, but then I always remember talking about Kamhuali'i, and also remembering this chant that I was exposed to during my time at Halohol Moana Kanehunumoku Voyaging Academy when I was a senior. They taught us this oli of Nakua Mano. And so it's basically a genealogy of all of these Mano that I believe are also descendants from Kamhuali'i. And so I remember I was so jealous of all of my fellowship mates who got to see sharks before I did. But I remember they would always go in and out. They would always disappear from the stern of the ship and then go to the bow and then come back to the stern. And then so I remember while we were waiting for them to appear again after we were done our shift, I would chant the verse that I was assigned to back when I was in Halohol Moana. I would chant that in my head or silently out loud. And then these three shark would appear. And each verse in Nakua Mano, there's three sharks that they wanted us to memorize. And then so I would chant my three sharks, and at least two of them would appear. So I always remember making that connection back to Kamhuali'i, like, okay, these are descendants of Kamhuali'i. So, yeah.
Beautiful.
It was, I was stoked. Yeah.
I had a question as you were talking that related to your studies. I bet, you know, when I first heard that chant, it's when we chant the sun down in on Kaho'olawe, o kai uli kuhikau kuhikau, right? And I remember thinking of takai uli. And then when you guys went out there to explore it on the Nautilus, and what you get, it really gave me an understanding of the expansiveness of our world, the depth of the Kai'uli. You guys were seeing things in the Kai'uli that human eyes have not seen before in that part of the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands. And it made me think of you know, how your original influences of, you know, the ocean around here and your experiences on Kaho'olawe continue to rise up your life to opportunities like that. That Yuhawainai's got to see that and experience it at a deep level. Kai'uli, deep level.
Quite literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a beautiful moment. Like, and our expedition's name was called Omuana Kai'uli, like the path of the deep sea traveler. And so what made it even more special, and what really opened my eyes as we try to integrate, you know, Western technology and indigenous studies, is that with our technology, we were able to bring you and Mom along with us.
Yeah, yeah, so that was special.
Both of you also are also deep sea travelers along with us. And so, yeah. And not only did our eyes get to see, but everybody around the whole world. And it connected us no matter what country that they were in. It was really beautiful to kind of, you know, like our science communication fellow who was on our shift would, Daniel would kind of read off the names of the countries who were tuning in, because he could see it on his work desktop. And so seeing all these names of different countries being brought together from a common interest, of a common passion, and of a common goal. And it was really beautiful to kind of see, like, not only is, like, our sea deep, but also we as people are deep as well. But we were still able to connect on a deep and spiritual level when we come together with the same passion, with the same question in mind.
Come back to, you said you had three sharks that you, was your part of the Oli. Do you remember that Oli?
Yeah, sometimes I forget at least one shark's name, unfortunately, but...
What did it sound like?
My verse, I think it kind of went like, Na kua ma no I kayakana loa o kane I kokalo holoke, kanaka o kai holoke, o lua ehu holoku. And then somebody else would chant their next poku. And then we all come together. I forget what the last poku sounds like, but we say, Holoka, holokai, holoka, holoke, ku. Something like that. And it was just, we would study that over and over again. So by the time we went up to the Northwestern Islands for our huaka'i at the end of that program, we would have it memorized. And I just remember, like, at the end of every single time we went do that oli, it was so powerful. And, like, you could tell that they were there. Yeah. Even though we weren't allowed in the ocean because of, you know, permit kindings. And you could tell that they were there. Yeah. Yeah. And so that also leads me to my other question is, I know we got to talk a little bit about, you know, our upbringing on the ship as well. And so I talked about how you were a land person, and then, you know, Mom would call me up and be like, you know, your dad was kind of angry that you wouldn't say he was a land person. And I'm like, well, he works on the land. But I also know that you work a lot in the ocean as well. So why did you choose to pursue a profession that was more land-based than ocean-based?
That's what I grew up around. And that's what I grew up around, and that's what I fell in love with. And I don't feel regretful that that's the course I chose. I got to study it, and it exposed me to science, and understanding it. It developed a passion in me for native plants, for native biota, in understanding it. Like what I share with our guests is the delicacy or how delicate our biota is, right? You cannot plant koa trees any kind of place, right? It has to have specific fauna in the soil, a fungus that helps it to make nitrogen for itself. And if that fungus is not the right species that coincides to that tree, the tree will not grow. They will not function together. So that level of intimacy in our forests became apparent to me, and I watch what they do up in Dr. Madaris, Oahu, up Mauka, and you know it has to do with trying to find original DNA, analog DNA of that area, and that's what they plant in those areas because that is the DNA that is specific to the climate and everything else that contributes to the success of that forest. And then it becomes as simple as keeping the ungulate animals out.
That leads me to my next question about that. So you're saying original DNA from the original plants that were in that area mm-hmm. with that climate. So in response to climate change, how do you foresee the success of that original, of those original species as our climate is changing?
I think we have a huge capacity to, I'm not an environmentalist, I'm not an ecologist, I mean, I'm kind of like, but the capacity, seeing the capacity of the earth to rehabilitate itself, and that came from Kaho'olawe. Seeing that, and seeing how these rainforests up on Oahu rehabilitate themselves, using original plant materials, original genetic lines that come from that place, that restoring that, it grows up like you get the ungulates out of there from eating everything. That's why we have these symmetrical shapes, squares and triangles up on the mountain now. The shape of those fence lines. Everything is eaten away by the ungulates, except where they can't get into. And the rainforest comes roaring back. I've watched it from when they first planted it, and now it's just thriving forest. I think it's like Kaho'olawe, it's a message to all of us that that we can, and like I said, the poison in it is us and what we do. But those are evidences that we can manage ourselves. We can manage what we do and our overall influence on the environment. And you're at the threshold of that. So you just graduated, and I know you want to study some more. You enjoy the family payroll.
What?
So you will continue to learn things in you know your field of choice. But as you know, when I was studying agriculture, just the studies that we had as it related to science and so forth and how plants grow. You know, I remember my father sitting me in Aloha Restaurant. No, it wasn't Aloha Restaurant. It was a Pizza Hut right next to Aloha Restaurant way back. What's there now? Walgreens or something. And he says, "Well, son, what do you want to do?" And I was like a freshman at MCC or something like that. And I told him I took a botany class from Ernie Reasons. And wow, I really love plants. And of course, we had been farming. And so he just shook his head and he said, "Yeah, okay. Just whatever you choose to do, you know, do it well and, you know, no go halfway, right?" I think that was his point to learn to love it or whatever. And so I have always loved being. I always say I'm a mahi'ai, though I work in the hotel with landscape and all of that. But you know, working in the landscape has allowed me to be able to tell the story of places like Wailea, right, with the landscape, and I feel energized by that kuleana. And I hope everybody, when they get a job, they feel that same kind of passion about what they do, that you will evolve, and I'm sure you do. I see your passion for the ocean, that you will continue to to foster that in your life, because what, you know, what some people say, it's not a job when you love it, right? So that's why I do not bemoan being the Mahiai person or the land person or the Kuaina person working on the land. Somebody got to do it, right? We got to eat, right? So I've learned a lot, and it has connected me a lot to those things that are in nature, you know. When I go to Kaho'olawe, and I just talked about all those things that attracted me to Kaho'olawe, came from those initial interests in nature. Mm. Right? So Tutu names me Kala Helevale. And early on in my life, she said, it means naked boy. And then I said, where that came from? And so my sister and brother guys used to tease me about, hey, naked boy, come on. And then my mom said, no, it means nature boy. So like from when I was small, my mom was calling me nature boy. And then later I learned that, you know, Kala, the sun, Hele, Tugo, Vale, all over, the sun that goes all over. Also connected to nature that I worked with and developed a passion for. And I continue to wonder about the kona of my name. And I'm proud and glad that she gave me that name. And it was my grandmother's name, because it stimulated my interest to continue being interested in these kind of things. So.
Mm. Well, mahalo tutu and mahalo papa.
Right?
For making you guys work on the film.
Okay, lava.
For giving you that name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't be here without you guys.
Literally.
Yes.
So I'm going to share with you, or will you share with us your name to close?
Aww.
Where did it come from?
Well, my name is Kukui, but my whole name is Kukui Li'ili'i. Some people call me Kukui Nut, and that's fine. Some people, I tell them, oh, what does Kukui Li'ili'i mean? And I'm like, oh, little light. And they're like, oh, quite literally little. I'm like, yeah, thanks. But... because, you know, I'm five foot one. I just want to emphasize that I am taller than my mother now. But whenever I tell
her... No 1 inch in the world ever was more important.
Half inch, actually. Just want to put that on document right now. 5'1", half an inch. But I got that name from my dad and my mom. Because... well, because you're kind of the reason why I'm also here, Mom. So I remember you guys always telling me this story. When you guys first saw me, I was just a little light inside of ultrasound
image
yeah. thing. Yeah. So, yeah, that's my name. Tiny light. So.
That's the moment I fell in love with you. Aww. And it is also... that I always wanted to name one of my child after a plant. So came the kukui. Mm. Yeah, okay. Mahalo.
Mahalo for giving me that name, Papa.
It means daddy's love. Mm.